Good evening, everyone. Welcome to City of Reedley's council meeting for September 22nd, 2020. It's good to see more people in here this evening. You know, we're fighting a crazy pandemic, but it's getting better. So thank you for your patience and your flexibility. This evening, we're going to start with an invocation. It will be done by our assistant city manager, Mr. Paul Malikian. And the Pledge of Allegiance will be led by myself, Mayor Frank Pignon. Would you please stand and remain standing until the Pledge of Allegiance is done? Mr. Malikian.
Okay. Please bow your head. Dear Heavenly Father, we believe your word that where two or more gather together in your name, you are there also. We gather tonight amongst great turmoil in our nation, natural disasters all around us, and hurting in our community. Your word tells us that we glory in tribulations, knowing that tribulation produces perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope, and that hope does not disappoint because the love of God has been poured out in our hearts by the Holy Spirit who was given to us. Let us remain steadfast in your blessed assurances, in your boundless grace, and in the immeasurable greatness of your power. Grant us renewed hope for our nation and for our community. Grant our city council the wisdom to make decisions that are in your will, Lord. We pray for the leaders of our country and our local community, and we also pray for those who mean us harm, that you would also do your wonderful transformative work in their hearts. We ask your blessing this evening on our agenda and its discourse, and we pray all of these things in your glorious name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. Would you please join me in the council in the Pledge of Allegiance? Ready? Salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a roll call, please.
Councilmember Beck?
Here.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Here.
Councilmember Fast?
Here.
Councilmember
Salina?
Here.
Mayor
Pena? Here. Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda?
There are no changes. There are no changes to the agenda.
Very good. Do we have motion to approve?
Motion.
Second. Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember
Salino? Yes.
Mayor
Pena? Yes. Thank you. We have, let me start with the presentation. And it's an introduction of Amar Baines, accountant in the finance department. Mr. Malikian, would you please stand and introduce her?
Please, Amar. Okay, thank you, Mayor and City Council. It's a real pleasure to be up here this evening to introduce Amar Baines to you. I have a brief introduction. Come on up, Amar. Come on up, please. Yeah. I have a brief introduction I'd like to read. Amar was born and raised in India and came to the U.S. 12 years ago. Before joining the city of Reedley, she worked in the private sector for almost 10 years before coming to work for the city of Fowler this summer in their finance department. She lives in Clovis with her husband, Jazz, and her three children, daughters Anu and Banu, and her son, Meher. She is a God-fearing individual and strongly believes in helping others. I will add that the current recruitment for the accountant position was a competitive one, with the city receiving 48 applications.
Wow.
Ooh.
So far, since coming aboard the beginning of September, Mar has hit the ground running with an inquisitive mind, and she's proving to be a fast learner, which is very important for us. Most importantly, though, she has a great attitude, and I speak for our department when I say that she is just a real pleasure to work with. I wish you much success here with the city, and welcome to Reedley.
Thank you so much.
Would you like to say anything, Amar?
Yes. It's a pleasure meeting you all. So today it has been 3 weeks since I started working here, and I consider myself truly blessed to be part of such a wonderful team. I'm very grateful for this opportunity, and I'll continue to work with diligence and integrity. Thank you, everyone.
Welcome. And Laura and your family, we just want to say welcome. We're glad you're with us. And we're looking forward to a long-lasting work relationship. And this is your family now. And you're our family, so thank you. Very good. We move on to public comment. It provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the city council on items of interest to the public within the council's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is a policy of the council not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the city manager's office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the council as each item is brought up for discussion. Are there any comments from the public? Please come to the podium and state your name.
Yes, my name is Ron Robertson, citizen in the community. And first, I want to just say thank you to our city council for the good work you're doing. These are not easy times, but I want you to know that you're appreciated. And thank you for your service. And also to our city servants who serve here as well. The question I have, and just a reflection, I'm a pastor at the Full Gospel Church in Reedley. I understand the building next to us, the National Guard Armory, the state is going to sell it. And I just want to thank the council for all their working on this behalf, but I'd also like to ask whatever you can do to help keep this building for our veterans, for the community. It's served our city well. There are many weddings, funerals, quinceañeras, and other things in that building. Without it, we'll be at a loss. So I just want to ask your consideration for whatever you could do to help keep that for the city of Reedley. Most of all, our thanks for the work you do.
Thank you, Pastor Ron. Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from the council? And we do have a phone number that public can call. We're going to do that, right? For the public, we have a phone number you can call if you have any questions or comments. The number is 559-637-4200, extension 290. So you may call at this time. We'll give them a few minutes. Thank you, Pastor Ron. Very good. We had no calls. Are there any questions from the council or comments? Being none, do we have a motion? We don't need a motion, do we?
Correct.
Move on to consent agenda. Consent agenda items are considered routine and a recommended action for each item is included and will be voted upon as one item. If a council member has questions, request additional information or wishes to comment on an item, the vote should not be taken until after the questions have been addressed or comments made, and the public has had an opportunity to comment on the consent agenda items. If a council member wishes to have an item considered individually or change the recommended action, then the item should be, then an item should be removed and acted upon as a separate item. Council members vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motions in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoption of ordinances, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent agendas. Or consent items, I'm sorry. Are there any items that the council wishes to remove?
I'd like to remove 6 and 7.
Very good. Do we have any,
Mr. Mayor, if I could, just to clarify, Councilwoman Fast, or remove for separate action, or are you just seeking clarification or have questions?
No, I just had a couple of questions.
Okay.
So we can include them with the whole group at the end.
Okay.
I just had a couple of questions.
And then, Mayor, as a reminder, since we have changed our process on this, we can go ahead and have staff stand up and answer those questions now before a motion, second, and vote are made.
Very good. This is addressed to Paul.
Oh, yes.
Yes, sir.
I think the first one's probably to somebody, not to you, but that's okay. I'll ask anyway. On this item 6, my question is, on the last one, the last business, I can't figure out what that is. It's on Manning and Sunset Avenue. Is that a doctor's office or something back there?
The medical shell building. That's
Walgreens. Yes.
Yeah.
So that is a medical shell building. Is the maybe the best way I can explain it?
Okay, so that's going to be a medical building.
Yes.
And there's an egress from Manning Avenue to get there. Is that right?
So that's a question.
Get the map.
Yes, I do.
I can show you mine. It's the last page of this item.
Yeah,
that is correct.
That's it.
That is correct. There's an easement in between the two, as you can see, leading to that property.
Okay. That was my only question on that one.
Okay.
Thank you. I just didn't know what it was, and I didn't have time to go over there and look. So, thank you.
Any other questions?
And item 7.
Yeah.
My question is on this: have we used SJ Construction Management for projects management services in the past?
We have not. We did have 3 consultants that submitted. SJ did have, when we read their proposal, everything was great. And then I actually called some of the cities that they listed that they had worked for before. And one of them had mentioned if they could use them on every project, they would. They recommended them highly, and I feel very confident that they're going to do a great job. And I thought it would be a good opportunity as well to have another firm on board that we, mm-hmm. if they do a great job, then we have a little bit more firms to choose from in the future.
Sure. Great. Okay. That was my question. Thank you. Uh-huh. I appreciate you doing some background work to make sure that we got a good company. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary Lou.
And I will just add, for the sake of listening public, because Paul is texting me that we do have a couple members of public listening, we don't always hire construction managers, but on projects on our major streets that are very complex with a lot of underground utilities, a lot of moving pieces, we do. All of the costs associated with the construction management firm will be covered by the grant source, which are usually either federal funds or state funds.
Okay. Any other questions for the council? And now we will open it to the public. If the public has any questions, now is the time for you to either stand and share your comments or questions, or we will go to the phones. And callers, the number is 559-637-4200, extension 290. You can call now. Thank you. good. We need a motion to approve this item.
So moved.
Is there? Be second?
Second.
Councilmember Salinas?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Mayor Pinheiro?
Yes.
And this is for all the items on the consent agenda, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Administrative business. Number 9, approve and authorize the city manager to execute a service agreement and all associated documents and amendments with Michael Bellet Consulting for evaluating SB 1383 compliance, solid waste services, and related state mandates. Admin, Mr. Robertson.
Hey. Good evening, Mayor Pinheiro and City Council members. Staff is recommending that the city manager be authorized to execute a services agreement with Michael Bellet Consulting for the purpose of evaluating SB 1383 compliance, solid waste service efficiencies, and related state mandates. So the state of California continues to place new mandates upon solid waste haulers and solid waste services at an alarming rate. I happened to view the CalRecycle website yesterday, and just in the fiscal year of 1920, the state of California, there was introduced 51 solid waste related bills were introduced to the state legislature for consideration. That's 51 bills just related to solid waste. And although not all of them were approved, every time a bill is passed, it seems to have a financial impact upon the city in some way or another. So an example of this is SB 1383, which requires the separation and collection of organic waste for all of our residential customers beginning January 1st, 2022. Now, the city already collects organic waste in our green cans in the form of lawn cuttings, tree trimmings. This mandate goes a step further in now requiring residents to separate food waste. And so this is a little bit, we've had meetings with state representatives personally and expressed to them how this will have a financial impact on the city and our solid waste services and ultimately our ratepayers. In their words, it's as simple as put the food waste in your green can with your yard clippings. That's all you have to do. Well, it sounds simple, but it definitely is not. So our current practice here in the city of Reedley is when our garbage trucks pick up your green can, when they dump your green can, we take that green waste and we take it to a set-aside location at our wastewater treatment plant, and it's all dumped on the ground. And when there's a big pile of it, about once a week, the composter, which is located in Lemoore, they bring a very large truck out to the wastewater treatment plant. All of the green waste is loaded on it. They take it back to Lemoore and it's composted. So this is a very reasonable, cost-effective way for us to do business right now. The county of Fresno has told us now, though, that we are not allowed to drop any food waste on the ground. So what this means to us is if food waste is put into our green cans, we cannot dump it on the ground. So those individual city garbage trucks will now have to make the track all the way to Lemoore, dump at the composting facility, and come all the way back. There is one composter that's a little bit closer than Lemoore, but their rate, and I won't say their name obviously, their rate is about twice as much as the composter in Lemoore. So this harkens back, if I can take us back in time just a little bit, the last recycling mandate that we had was general recyclables that you put in your blue can, your paper waste, your cardboard, your plastics. I know you're all aware that we had, as of 2 years ago, we were receiving $20 a ton for turning in our recyclables. Things were working very well. Well, the recycling market crashed. And now, today, as you're aware, we're paying $37 a ton to take our recyclables to the sorter. And that is a substantial change. And I know you're all aware of that because we had to raise rates to accommodate that increase in operational cost. So we have begged and pleaded with the state to first, let's step back and try to solve our general recyclables issue that we have, which is recyclables you put in your blue can, before we move forward with another recycling mandate. That apparently has fallen upon deaf ears as we continue to plow ahead with the organics waste mandate and the timelines that they have set forth. So that is very discouraging to us. Our goal as a city is that we want to comply with state mandates, but we want to comply with the least amount of impact to our solid waste operations, and we want to comply with the least financial impact, obviously, to our ratepayers. So in an effort to make that happen and to comply with these mandates in the most economical way possible, we have solicited a consultant services agreement with MBC. And MBC is a firm that specializes in basically that, compliance with state mandates. They specialize in solid waste service efficiencies. And I think this is an opportunity for us to really get an outside view, for somebody to look in on us and to let us know, are we operating in the most efficient way possible? Is there anything that can be streamlined? And also, what are the most cost-effective ways to handle these mandates that are continuously being brought our way? So MBC is going to prepare a plan of action. They will do a full evaluation. They will then prepare a report, and they will also prepare a presentation to bring back to City Council for your review and consideration of their findings. So I would be happy to answer any questions at this time that you might may have on this item.
Chris, I'm just curious, what if it can't be set on the ground, what can it be set on?
So anything that we dump on the ground, regardless of what it is, we have to have permission from the county to do so. It's almost like a mini transfer station agreement. So the food waste cannot touch the ground.
Is it considered toxic waste?
One of the reasons for that is the pests and rodents, things like that, roaches, and you get food waste, maggots, etc. So this is a county health department mandate that food and organic waste not be put on the ground. Because we are a small city, we're one of the few small cities our size that still do our own solid waste services. If you look at, let's say, a Fresno, they're large enough that they hire a transfer station, a waste company that does their recycling. They have their own transfer station, and so when the cans come in, it goes into a big transfer station, everything gets sorted. We're a small city with just a few trucks. We don't have the 500,000 population, and so our issues are different. A Sanger, a Selma, they have private haulers that leverage the size to have their own transfer stations. We would not be able to afford to have a transfer station, hence the issue that we're looking at with this new mandate. One of the things that we also need to be considering, and this gentleman, this consultant will help us, is our public is woefully unaware of the law that was just passed with organics recycling. And so we have a year, basically, year and a half, to get our public up to speed in the fact that they're going to have to be putting their food waste in green cans or other cans or whatever the case may be, rather than putting it into their regular waste can. So we have a lot to do in a very short time frame, given what the state has asked us to do. And again, because we are one of the small few remaining cities that does our own, most cities can simply have their private haulers take care of all of that, including the marketing and education of their public. We don't have that luxury right now. So this gentleman will also help us with his consulting assignment to do all these things. And frankly, Russ and I were pretty shocked. It came in at about half of what we thought it would cost us to do this consulting assignment. So we're very pleased at the pricing.
Just have them send a trailer. We can load it on that trailer. They can pick it up once a week. Salt.
I wish it were that easy. I really do.
Okay, any other questions from the council?
I only have one, and I know this is probably well ahead of the horse, but how much would it be to build your own composting? How much area do you need to do the composting, and maybe even have people bring in to you and make a business out of it itself for the city?
I'm really glad you brought that up, because we have thought of that in the past when we first started collecting green waste, of having a composting facility at our Lackjack property. There's plenty of room. The hurdles to jump through at the state level, so I'm sure you see the irony here.
Oh, yeah.
State mandates composting. State makes it extremely difficult for composters to have a business. The environmental studies are outrageous, as well as the fees. We did look into that even years ago when we looked into it. It was...
I was just curious because that would have been a another way of looking at this, because
absolutely,
instead of hauling it, they come and get it, or you sell it outright, and we have a product to sell.
Yeah,
and so, but the state, someone's got to put a rein on the state. That's all there is to it, because they're making mandates and not giving you a way to take care of the problem. They're just making the problem and leaving it to you to figure out how to handle it.
You know, I'll harken back to an article that we talked about probably 3 or 4 months ago that was in our Western City magazine put out by the League of California Cities. And the state was very clear, very transparent in that article that they simply believe that cities and private haulers should raise their rates in order to cover the cost of this organics mandate. So I at least can say that, hey, they're telling us how they really feel up there. But this article, again, and I can provide it to any of you who are interested if you don't recall the article, was very clear that they simply expect us to raise rates to either add a can, to bring in private haulers, something of that nature to cover this. And we are trying everything that we can do not to raise rates on our public. So.
Yeah, if we get another container, we're going to need bigger alleys.
Right, that creates a whole other set of issues.
I need a bigger backyard.
And another truck going down the street, yeah. Yeah.
My goodness, Mr. Solano.
Russ, what, I'm just thinking, what happens to these big farmers that raise all these products that goes to waste? When they pick their fruit out of the fields and what's left over, they just get underground. Are they going to be affected? They're disking this waste underground.
I don't know. I know a lot of culls go to, you know, feed, animal feed. Are you referring to when they just disc the fruit that falls on it?
They don't pick the rest of the fruit that's not going to be marketed by them, so they disc on the ground.
I don't really know the answer to your question. I can tell you that one of the bills that I found interesting when I did my research on the CalRecycle website was just this month there's a bill before the governor to change the definition of organic waste. As far as organic waste right now is considered a biogas, they want to change the definition that organic waste is a biomethane, which the definition of biomethane means it's not harmful to the environment. So where we were burning off gases in our landfills just a few short years ago, I thought that was interesting that now that they've mandated that organic waste be recycled, the definition of organic waste has now changed to a biomethane. So just an interesting point.
Okay.
I don't know if that answers your question. But
no, it's just interesting. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Questions? Any more questions from council? We go to public for questions. So again, number is 559-637. 4200 extension 290. Caller, it's your time. Very good. We move on to administrative business.
Vote.
Oh, I'm sorry. Motion to approve.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Councilmember Salino.
Salino.
Oh, this is
Betancourt. Then Salino.
I'm sorry. Councilmember Betancourt.
Yes.
Who was second? I'm sorry.
Salino.
Salino. Thank you.
Yes.
Councilmember Salino.
Yes.
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 Mayor Pinion.
Yes. Item 10. approve and authorize items pertaining to the Proposition 68 per capita grant program for local parks with the State of California Office of Grants and Local Services. Are we going to take all these together or just?
You may take them all together, Mayor.
Okay. I'm just going to read them off and then I'll turn it over to you.
Sounds good,
Sarah.
Thank you.
A, approve the recommended project list. B, approve and authorize the city manager to sign an application form for each project on the identified project list. And C, adopt resolution number 2020-086, approving the terms of the contract and designate the city manager as the authorized representative. Sarah Reed.
Good evening. Thank you, Mayor and members of the council. Sarah Reed, Community Services Director. It's my pleasure to talk about this program. It's very rare that we receive funding that doesn't require a match and is giving us some flexibility to consider really the needs we have in our community. So this program came out of Proposition 68, which was passed by the voters in June of 2018. It was known as the Parks, Environmental, and Water Bond Act. This non-competitive grant program provides funding for local governments to support rehabilitation, creation, and improvements in our local parks. So staff attended a mandatory workshop, and you will see the timeline outlined here in the report that they gave us. Looking at March in 2024 seems so far away. With the projects that are being presented here for you tonight, I'm hoping that we can achieve this much sooner than the deadlines that they have given us. But the city of Reedley qualified for both the general per capita program and the urban county per capita program for a total amount of $194,081. With this limited amount, the Community Services Commission started considering and made the recommendation for what they feel is the best projects for this limited amount of funding. So the first project, let me see if I can get this. No, let me see. I'm going to let you do it. Yes. Perfect. I wanted to bring some visuals. Okay, so the first project presented before you is at Trimble Park. So as you know, the Melville family made a donation to the Parks and Recreation Foundation in the amount of $100,000 in remembrance of Pam. We have finished the sage structures. I hope you've been by there. They look beautiful. We got a lot of positive comments for that. And so remaining in that donation is just shy of $45,000. So the donor asked if he could assist with completing the playground structure that was proposed in Trimble Park but wasn't added at the time of the completion of the original construction. So the spot that you see before you is where kind of the area would designate it out. Talking to the company that put in the shade structure, they made some recommendations of nice equipments that would fit within the space. We didn't want to go in and start moving landscape, so we really had the parameters set for us to what could fit in there within the fall zones that are required by the law. So we agreed upon or liked this climbing structure that you see before you. We talked to them a lot about it being in a splash pad. Would this fit well? And they said yes, it's a beautiful play structure that would fit nicely in that space. So staff is recommending that we use a little over $10,000 of the per capita fund to make this project whole. The city would have to partner with the foundation again, like we did with the shade structure, but that would complete the projects in Trimble Park. The next project is Citizens Park Shade Sales. So if you're like me, I think of Citizens Park as one of our newer parks. It was actually constructed in 2006, so some of these things are getting to their expiration of life. As you recall, about a year and a half ago, we had to remove that rubber surface that was on the walking trail, because that was basically getting to the safety concern aspect. If you look at the shade sails, they are also starting to rip, starting to deteriorate, and they will get to the point probably within the next year or so of needing to be removed also. So we did receive two bids to replace this, and the higher one came in at $36,000. So staff feels very comfortable if this is a project that is selected that we can get it done for that, if not lower. The third project is the playground rubber surface in Citizens Park. This is the same age as the shade sails. 2006. Like the rubber surface that was on the walking trail, this too is starting to deteriorate beyond the point of being able to patch it any longer. It will get to the point where it will become a safety concern and will have to either be closed off or forced removal at that time. Citizen Park being one of our heaviest used parks in town, it felt like this would be a good use of the funding, being the amount that we have to work with and the impact that it would have on the community. Since the price we have before you, this was an estimate we received. Because of the amount of it, it will have to be a formal bid. So staff is looking at having an add-on for the fitness clusters. They too have rubber surface underneath them that is the same age, but within the amount that we have to work with, I don't know if that's going to be feasible. So we would look to have that as an add-on and see what that came in, knowing that someone's out there doing similar work already. So this evening, staff is recommending that you approve and authorize the items pertaining to Proposition 68. You'll see that there's quite a few attachments. That's because the resolution that's before you has language in there about the project applications. So each project we have to submit a separate application for. So this is giving city manager authorization to sign those. So I wanted to provide the language in advance. Also, the contract that will be required. So the way the state wants this is the resolution first, that's saying that we agree to all these things. We submit that, then we submit our project list, applications for each project, then at that time they will execute a contract with us. So I wanted to make sure that you had all the documents in front of you, because this is really one action that they had lumped into one resolution. So the items we're asking you to consider tonight is approve the recommended project list. So that we have for you, it lists Trimble Park, Citizens Park play structure, and Citizens Park playground surface. Approve and authorize the city manager to sign an application form for each project that's identified on this list. And then adopt resolution number 2020-86, approving the terms of the contract, and designate the city manager as the authorized representative. So at this time, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions, Council?
Well, I'd like to commend the Community Service Commission for this mm-hmm. project here. Mm-hmm. They could have gone to another new project, but then they could have left these mm-hmm. other projects here in dire need of service. Mm-hmm. So they've done a great job here.
Thank you. I think our city has done a phenomenal job with Pioneers Park was invested in, Mueller Park was invested in, and now looking at Citizens Park, it's hard to believe that it's getting to that point as well, that these things just need to be considered to keep that park thriving and in such a high level as it is.
I just can speak for Citizens Park. We use that with grandkids a lot, and that playground surface, and I'm always saying, now don't go over there. Where those things, the holes are, don't dig your feet in there and start making it worse. So I think that's a good idea. And I like the idea of the climber at Trimble Park and finishing that off. I'm just hoping somehow we can open that park up even when we're not using the splash pad area. So just something to put in the back of your mm-hmm. mind, if something to think through. It's such a pretty place, and now we put all those nice shades there.
Yes,
but I can't go have a picnic. So anyway,
thank you.
Any more questions, Council?
Excuse me. Well, 35 years ago when I got on the council, this city was lacking in parks. We had programs that didn't accommodate the kids, and now we've done a great job. Mm-hmm. It's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I will say, Mr. Salino, that you have been a champion for the sports park and moving that on. And one of the things I want to just reiterate with the council is we are continually pounding the pavement up in Sacramento looking for grant funds to build that sports park. Mm-hmm. We were hoping, and in fact our grant writer was just absolutely sure that the Prop 68 competitive grant funds would lead us to the next phase of sports park development. And as you know, we were unsuccessful because of what we consider to be a pretty stilted view of the median income in Reedley. They took one tract versus the entire median income of the city. The census tract they looked at, we thought was very unfair given that's a regional park. So that was Prop 68 funding. This, though, as per capita funding for Prop 68, was so limited we couldn't really use it much for the next phase of sports park. So that's why we're spreading it to other places. I think the Community Services Commission did a great job of recognizing it wouldn't go very far at sports park. Mm-hmm. It would go much farther in Citizens and Trimble. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to give you the impression that we're letting off the gas with the sports park. We are really looking for ways to fund the next phase of that development.
Well, all I can say about the sports park, whenever it's developed, you're going to see a big change in this city.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You're going to have so many different sports out there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's going to generate tournaments. I hope that by that time you have enough accommodations like motels or hotels to accommodate the people that are in Reedley.
One glimmer of hope I want to share with the council. I can't remember if I shared in a previous meeting, but there is a grant, a rural grant coming available in 2021. So we've already been talking to the Parks and Rec Foundation because the city can't be the lead. It has to be a county agency or a nonprofit. Mm. The sports park, we're hoping, we've already talked to the state. They know that we're disappointed about this. And she's the one that actually said, look for that grant that's coming out, because if you can team up with somebody, mm-hmm. that would be a great one for the sports park. Mm. So the foundation's aware. We've already been talking about it. Our grant writer knows when it comes out, we're ready to go. So fingers crossed, in a year or so, maybe we'll have a grant that we can compete for that the sports park would suit. Mm.
Great.
Wonderful. We haven't, this particular park I'm going to talk about is not one that we've been talking about. But did you notice the park on Columbia is missing the rim?
Yes, the basketball rims have been removed. It was hard to keep people off of them in this time of not encouraging gatherings.
Okay.
So eventually those will go back up, but that was the reason due to COVID. It was trying to minimize those gatherings and close contacts.
Oh, maybe somebody took them home.
I
just never know.
Truly in today's world, yeah.
But Sarah, wonderful job. Your efforts. You're a trooper. And we appreciate all your hard work.
Thank you. So much. Yeah, it was. I really appreciate my commissioners. We all put our heads together and tried to figure out where the priorities lie and what really mm-hmm. could get us our best bang for our buck. Yes. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and stay on top of that for next year. Yeah, good. For sports park, that'd be mm-hmm. great. Very good. We go to public with questions. Do we have any questions to the public? And the number is 559-637-4200, extension 290.
Oh, Sarah?
Oh, yes, you have a question. Mr. Penner.
Mayor Pignon and council members, I'm Steve Penner. I'm on Sarah's commission. So, I'd like to especially mention the finishing the playground at the Trimble Park, and feel that this prop is a really good opportunity to do that. The Melville family is so generous, $100,000, but to do the playground equipment that we thought was best, there was another one that was cheaper, but this one seemed to fit much better. But it takes another $10,000-$11,000. So this proposition just worked out, the numbers worked out that we could take advantage of Proposition 68 to finish that playground. Mm-hmm. And we're looking forward to the day when we celebrate with the Melville family, mm-hmm. The shades and the mm-hmm. Playground.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Yes.
Thanks, Steve.
You. Very good. Do we need a motion for this? We do. Yes. We have a motion to approve.
I'll move.
Second.
Yes.
Councilmember Salino.
Yes.
Councilmember Beck.
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt.
Yes.
Mayor Pinon.
Yes. We move on to workshop item 11 regarding the actual evaluation report of the Reedley Retiree Health Care Plan. Mr. Malikian.
A copy of the slides are being passed out right now. There are a few extra copies if anybody in the audience would like one. Just holler.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very colorful.
Yeah, it was kind of hard for me to push to press the print button on the color, but figured it was going to be memorable here.
This subject usually is.
Yes. Back by popular demand here, we have a brief workshop before you this evening to discuss the latest actuary evaluation for our city retiree health care plan. This marks the fourth actuarial evaluation since the tiered plan was established in 2013. So just some the topic areas of the workshop this evening are the history of the plan, the sustainability measures that have been put into place, and then the current plan status. I'm going to go pretty quickly over the history part. Four of the five council members were on council at the time this was established. Mayor Pinon, feel free to pause me if there's anything that you'd like to discuss on the history, but I'll go pretty quickly through there.
Thank you.
So the city had enrolled in CalPERS plans in 1988, very cheap. It required us, as part of being part of CalPERS, to cover all employees, to cover our retirees and their dependents at that time. It's a very minimal impact to our budget. It was literally a few dollars per month at that time. CalPERS increased those costs over time. In 2013, it was about 97% of the cost. So it went from just maybe a few dollars a month to where we were covering 97% of the cost of the plan. So those costs grew steadily. So, just as an example, in 2000, we only budgeted $25,000 to cover all the retirees and their dependents. We saw some substantial increases overall in the healthcare industry. In addition, we had more retirees and dependents join the plan. And by 2013-14, about 13 years later, costs had grown to almost $250,000 a year, about 10 times. And these costs were paid out of the general fund and city utility funds. So the dilemma, of course, was that it was on that track, it was an unsustainable promise that we had given our retirees and our current employees. So it was a very common issue still in California. The state of California, as well as literally hundreds of public agencies grappling with this issue, very timely issue. So just the cost increasing more than our overall budget. But on the same token, our existing retirees and our longtime employees depend on the benefit, and also those employees, it contributes to their longevity here as well. So some of the considerations at the time to make the benefit more sustainable, we branched out and we looked, what are other agencies doing? We spoke with about 15 different agencies in depth, not just a quick email, in depth, as well as some attorneys and some consultants at no cost to the city. We used our networks to get the information. The best practice at that time and continues to be to tier the benefit. So it maintains the coverage for existing retirees who are dependent on it. It preserves options for our longtime career employees. The most important thing on the sustainability side, though, is it contains cost because it caps our future liability. Fortunately for the city, this promise was never put into any labor MOUs. So there was no bargaining that was required at that time. So it made it a little bit easier to make the transition. It wasn't easy, but it made it a little easier. We had to consider that we were paying all the costs at that time, but we were not pre-funding anything for the future. Whereas as opposed to our pensions for public servants, those are pre-funded for the future. This was not being pre-funded at all. So we looked at establishing a trust, which was a best practice at the time, and again, it continues to be, so that the contributions we do for pre-funding can grow tax-free. So just some quick timelines on the sustainability measures that were put into place. In June 2013, The council opted out of PEMCA, as it's known, the Public Employees Medical and Hospital Care Act, that required us to provide coverage to our retirees and dependents. It was also required for the city to opt out of getting coverage from CalPERS. At that time, CalPERS was doing some pretty interesting things in this area. They introduced risk-based pricing, so that way certain counties would be paying more based on their perceived risk of their health, of their people they cover there, and it was going to mean some pretty big increases to the city that we simply could not afford at that time. So we exited the plans effective December 31, 2013, and we were no longer required to provide coverage to the retirees. However, in September of that year, the City Council established by resolution a tiered retiree medical benefit. So that continues to be in place to this day. In February 2015, the city elects to begin pre-funding the benefit for the future by establishing a Section 115 trust, that's an IRS revenue code section, to begin pre-funding it, and we join the California Employers Retiree Benefit Trust Program. So just some quick reminders of how that tiered benefit works. Our tier one is the current retirees. The switch to a tiered medical benefit was of minimal impact to the retirees. I won't say there was no impact because some retirees experienced a little bit of an increase in their out-of-pocket. Some had to change their providers at the time. The tier two essentially is the current full-time employees of the city. And that is broken up into two different strata, essentially, of 10 years of service and 20 years of service. The longer you serve the city and you retire from the city, the more of the benefit the city will cover currently under the plan. There are some pretty strict eligibility requirements, so that it's even if you've been here a long time, there's still some things you have to meet in order to be eligible for the plan. One of the big benefits to the tiered benefit is that it took care of the retiree and the dependent, but it fixed our contributions for the dependents at a certain dollar amount. And then tier three are employees hired after December 31st, 2013. They are not eligible for the benefit. So there is no city liability being accrued for that future benefit. Those employees are well aware at the time of hire that this benefit is not offered to them. So moving on, we spoke about pre-funding. That's the definition from the California Employers Retiree Benefit Trust of essentially what their mission is in the Section 115 Trust. That they take our money that we pre-fund every year and they invest it tax-free, and they're able to invest in vehicles that we are simply not able to do as a California public agency. So just to show you the level of interest in these types of vehicles, in 2015 they had 443 participating public agencies in California. I just looked yesterday, they have 575 participating public agencies. That's a huge increase. All large cities all the way down to just little tiny special water districts in the state. It runs the entire gamut. So moving on, some updates on our pre-funding progress. We began pre-funding for the 2015-16 budget year at a 15% of our estimated annual premiums that year. So it ended up being $45,600. In 2016-17, we contributed the same amount again. 17-18, it was $50,000 because premiums were estimated to be higher that year. And in 18-19, $53,000. So it goes on. This last budget year, we contributed about the same amount. So the contributions to the trust as of June 30, 2020, this last summer, the actual dollars we've sent to the trust was $247,545. The market value as of June 30th is now $288,469. So that's an increase of almost $41,000 or 16.5%. That's not year over year how much we've earned, but if you average it out over the last 5 years that we've been pre-funding. So that is a big driver as to why our unfunded liability is going down, because we're able to invest those dollars. The current pre-funding, the council approved some changes in this current year's budget that we're now pre-funding at 25% of estimated premiums instead of 15%. That allows us to send a little more money to the trust, but it has a significant impact on our ability to make the plan more cost sustainable for the future. So this year it equates to $85,000 approximately. I've said it, I think, a few times that the council's commitment to making these regular payments has a significant impact to decrease our unfunded liability. The long-term rate of return expected from the trust is just over 7%. This is different than like CalPERS discount rate. This is not affected by a lot of the political winds about what they're investing in, green energy and that sort of thing. These funds are managed separately. They're able to invest in far more vehicles, maybe vehicles that actually make money, as you can see from the investments there. So that's all I'm going to say about that. So we're standing here with this valuation report in front of you because of the Governmental Accounting Standards Board. They have two statements that deal with this topic. It was first 45, now it's been superseded by 75. It requires this actuary evaluation of our total OPEB liability. OPEB is other post-employment benefits. It's required to be performed at least every 2 years and included in our financial statements, and we are compliant with that. This is our fourth biannual evaluation. So August 2014 was the first time I stood up here and gave this presentation. So just wrapping it up here, the current plan status of our covered retirees, we have currently, this is not of the valuation period of last summer, this is as of right now, we're covering a total of 60 retirees and eligible dependents. And they're made up of those numbers there as far as who they are, as far as age ranges. And then what's probably most interesting to me is that the Tier 2 employees, the people who are currently eligible for the benefit, is only about 55% of the workforce. So Tier 3 employees are about 44%. So since 2013, these are the employees that have come into the organization. They're not eligible for the benefit. And I misspoke a little bit. These percentages are as of last summer. I know that we've hired some folks since last summer, so these percentages are actually more closer to 50-50. So as time goes on, fewer and fewer of our employees will be eligible for the benefit as they're hired into the city. So
can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
On that one, the 2013 employees that are hired, there's no benefits, no liability. As the city grows, doesn't that cut back the quality of employees that you want in the city?
Well, these employees still have full medical benefits for themselves and their families while they work for the city. So for the entire time, they're covered by all the same benefits we are. And to be completely honest, most employees, until they're getting close to retirement, before we started making a bigger deal out of this, they didn't even realize that this benefit was there. It was only until they were getting close to retirement and they met with Darla that they said, oh, I have this medical benefit. They didn't even know it was there. And I'm not saying it's not important, but for the life of their career here, as long as they're here, they will be covered under our current insurance. Okay, I tried to make this as big as possible, but these are the four actuarial valuations that have been done since 2013, and it's the results slide that is included in the actuarial valuation. It shows the dates of 2013, 15, 17, and 19, so every 2 years. The discount rate is the first row. The first row shows a 4%, 4.5%. That's before the council decided to start pre-funding. And because you started to pre-fund, they're able to use a higher discount rate, essentially a higher assumed rate of return on the funds, which drastically brings down the liabilities. The next section is the present value of the benefits for the active employees, which are future retirees, the current retirees, and then total. You can see how the present value of the benefits has shrunk considerably over time. As employees leave the organization, as they retire, but they're not eligible for the benefit, whatever the reason might be, there's fewer employees that are eligible for the benefit, and that the value of those future benefits has gone down to approximately $8.2 million as of June 30th. This actuarial accrued liability is the unfunded part. So over time, the actives and the retirees here, you can see how those numbers have shrunk over time, and our unfunded actuarial accrued liability has gone from $14.4 million since we began pre-funding, and we've seen lesser employees be eligible for the benefit. It's shrunk over time to where, as of June 30th, our unfunded actuarial liability is about $6.8 million. Now, I'm not saying that that's a small number, but that's a far cry from the $14 million that it was 7 years ago. And we anticipate that this will continue to trend downward, maybe not so significantly, but that's what we expect. So what's very important...
I'm going to stop for just a minute and kind of put an exclamation point on what Paul is saying, because I did ask him to go briskly through all this, and maybe he's going too briskly. So let me put the exclamation point to say, when we first started this process in 2013, you know, we had had CalPERS medical plans, and the reason that the city had CalPERS medical plans previous to that point was they were very inexpensive when the city first got into those as medical plans. They got very expensive, and in 2013, the rates were going to increase by 26%. I don't know how I remember that number, but I remember that number. 26% medical premium increase. When we had CalPERS medical plans, we were required to offer retiree medical benefits. That was part of the CalPERS medical plan. What Paul didn't remind you all of, and four of the five of you were here, is we had a lot of retirees very upset that we were considering not providing medical benefits as a retiree. We had some retirees who have cancer, some whose spouses were in long-term care. They were very concerned, and so we did a very long, months-long process of meeting after meeting with the retirees, as you recall. There were threats of lawsuits. We also had threats of lawsuits from our two unions. This council and past city administrations did a brilliant move, whether or not they realized it, by never putting this benefit into labor negotiation, labor MOUs. If it was in labor MOUs, we could not have cut the benefit without going through a full meet and confer process under California labor law. So after all that process happened in 2013 and we tiered off this benefit, we essentially capped our total liability, and we knew we had capped it at that point. So we were pretty proud of ourselves of kind of stopping the bleeding at least, but we still had this gaping wound. That gaping wound was $15 million. We had that liability, $15 million. So the exclamation point that I want to put on it today is, because of your actions to pre-fund what amounts to be not a whole lot in the scheme of the city's budget, $25,000, $50,000, it's a lot of money, but just that amount each year has brought our liability down from $15 million to $6.8 million. That's a huge drop in just 5 to 6 years. And so if that kind of was glossed over, I want to make sure that the public knows we have tried to do a lot to safeguard their tax dollars in this program and yet also safeguard our retirees.
That's great. All well stated, City Manager. The final point on this slide is that the funded ratio, which is essentially the percentage of plan assets that we have today, so the $288,000, is 3.3% of what that total liability is. So again, I said last time the 1.2%, it was a little number, but it was a start. Well, still a little number, but it's a little bit of a bigger little number. So anyway, okay, so just a few final slides to wrap it up here. We are on a positive trend. The city manager was really great about talking about that. There's a positive trend here because of some tough decisions about 7 years ago, the commitment to making regular contributions, the reduction in the number of employees who are eligible, and our plan premiums. We've done a lot to keep our medical plan premiums, not just for retirees, but for current employees. We've done a lot of creative things to keep the coverage primarily in place for employees and their families who depend on it, but also to keep it cost effective. We've had to make some Herculean efforts this last 4 or 5 years to make that happen, and we've had to make some changes. So that has also helped. So as stated, our unfunded liabilities gone down from 8.5 to 6.8 million. At this time, we're not recommending any increases to the pre-funding amount. We believe that 25% is something that is a sustainable number in our budget, as well as makes meaningful progress towards funding that plan. We're going to manage overall healthcare costs very aggressively. And the next step, unless there's a call for action, is to review the June 30th, 2021 actuarial evaluation in the year 2022. So I hope to see you there. So that concludes my presentation, if there's any questions.
Thank you. Any questions, Council?
Yeah, I have some questions.
Let him have it.
All right. Oh, are you kidding? Okay, so the Tier 3 is any employees that are hired after January 1 of 2014?
Correct.
But yet, I'm kind of confused. Because when I look at the data summaries on page, well, it's E5, E6, and E7, I see active by age and service, and I see 1 to 4 years and less than 1 year, and there's numbers in there. So how are they not a part of this?
As part of the actuarial evaluation, they actually take into account ages and their length of service here. So even though they're not eligible for the benefit, they're still tracking all this information. And it's fairly interesting, actually, because this is an information that, you know, that we normally capture in this format. So.
Okay, and let's see. So the only funding that we do to this plan is out of the general fund. There's not any monies that are set aside from the employees, our current employees, like medical, to charge a little bit more to that account to help to pay for that?
So the way the benefit is budgeted this last year is the most accurate way of budgeting that we've done thus far, and it follows where the employee is working. Those contributions come out of that fund. Mm-hmm. So if they're split to gas tax or some other operating fund, it's mm-hmm. coming out of those. So it's not just coming out of the general fund. As to your question on the contributions, there's no contributions required by employees at this time. They're already paying contributions toward their current healthcare benefit and their current coverage.
Okay.
When they retire, the Tier 2 benefit is not as comprehensive as the Tier 1 benefit. So employees at that time will be out of pocket probably a little bit more than they currently are as active city employees. Because even if they work here 20 plus years, the city's only going to cover 80% of the cost of the benefit, and up to, I think it's $250 for their dependent. So at that time, they will have out of pocket that is more than what they have as an active employee, but it's still better than no coverage at all.
Okay, but the people in the Tier 1 section have the employee, the retiree, and their spouse and a dependent, and that's all covered? Or is there like a something that they pay a little bit on?
Yes, so the level of coverage is identical for the retiree as it is for current city employees. So the out-of-pocket for the retiree, for the pre-65, I should say. If they're 65, they're Medicare eligible, they fall into a different bucket, and okay. they are covered by the group Medicare plan, which is a lot more affordable for the city because
right.
Medicare is picking up the lion's share of that benefit.
Correct.
But for those pre-65 retirees, for the retiree that worked for the city, they receive the same level of coverage as current city employees. Their dependents, though, are covered only up to $250. So the additional cost to cover the dependent, and I think in all but one case, it's just the retiree and an eligible dependent. I believe there's only one or two cases where we have a dependent and then another dependent, such as a child.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if I answered your question this fast, but.
Yes, I think try. You did. I'm just trying to read all this stuff and understand it.
No problem.
I think you covered quite a few of my questions in your presentation. So in your actuarials, the value of the assets is basically what we as a city have put in to this fund plus whatever money's been made off of it, right?
Correct. Yeah, so that's the $288,000 as of
right.
June 30th.
Right, okay. Okay, on page, I'm gonna ask a dumb question probably, but on page 18.
Yes, ma'am.
It talks about 10-year contribution projections. And these are projections of what the city is gonna pay into? I didn't quite figure out where this money's coming from.
Okay, so the cash benefits payment is the essentially the forecast of where healthcare premiums are going to go for the retiree group. So we've seen lower than we originally thought increases to those premiums. Mm-hmm. So those increases to premiums going up for that 10-year period is built into the liability. So the $6.8 million includes the increases in medical premiums that we think we're gonna have.
Okay, and the trust contribution is what we're paying into, like the $46,000, the $77,000, that third column there?
Yes, ma'am. So so for instance, if you go all the way to the bottom to 2029, the 25% is $105,000, which is roughly a quarter of $418,000. Okay, sure.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Anytime.
Well, I just had one question.
Yes, sir.
When you say those that are eligible and those that are not, what does that exactly mean?
For instance, if the employee worked for the city for, say, 20 years and they qualify for the 80% coverage, but they don't retire from the city, let's say they go to work for another public agency somewhere, and they retire from that agency, they're no longer eligible for the benefit.
Oh, okay.
And another example is if they don't opt for the coverage at the time of retirement, and they say, no, I'd rather go get my coverage from somewhere else, and then 5 years later, they call us up and say, hey, that didn't quite work out. I'd like to join the plan. Sorry, you're locked out. So it was a one-time election to be able to be covered by the plan.
I got you. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Very good. Any other questions from council? Okay, did we do questions for the public? I don't remember.
Yeah.
We're done? Okay. Oh, we need to ask the public for questions. I don't remember. So public, is your time to call for, I'm sorry? Somebody says yes, somebody says no.
So this is a workshop item, so Mayor, it's your discretion as to whether you open it up to the public or not.
I don't think we need to.
Correct.
Very good. So we move on to update on the 2020 consensus process. Rob, you're on, brother.
Mayor, members of the council, thank you very much. At council's request, we're bringing you a very quick update on the census process and where we are. It's been a unique year, to say the least. Certainly unique to have a census count going on at the same time. I will say that in some of the numbers that we'll be able to take a look at, you will see significant improvements from the online response portion, which obviously is to be expected this year. I do not have a copy of the presentation I was going to hand out to you that is intentional. The reason why is because the data that I'm going to be sharing with you changes every single day. So the data points that I had even put in the staff report that was available several days ago are already a little bit different and were updated as of today in my presentation. So. That and there are contacts, a local and a regional contact, at the very last slide on this one, that I'm going to provide to the council after the meeting and in a PDF. So if you wanted to reach out to the census representative, you could click directly on that link and you wouldn't have to try to take the hard copy and type the email address out. So that's the reason why I'm not passing out copies as per usual tonight. Really quick, I just wanted to go on a very brief history of the census, some items that I think are very interesting and many times a lot of people don't know if they're not familiar with the census or have been involved with it. So the very first census in the U.S. was conducted in 1790, and it has taken place every 10 years since that time. The U.S. passed the 100 million mark in population in the 1920 census officially. In 1960, that was the first time that it included all of the 50 states that we currently have now. I would go over the various territories that are also included over the years as well, but I thought that one was the most relatable. And the largest population increase that ever occurred during a census count was between the 1990 and the 2000, when our population grew by just under 33 million.
Hmm. That's interesting.
It is very interesting. And then to take a look at some of these jumps here that you can see, so these go in a couple 10-year, but mostly 50-year spreads right there. So in 1790, you were looking at just under 4 million people, and then by the time we got to 2010, you're at just under 309 million. So our country has grown just a little bit. Okay, so to get to the current census timeline, the counting itself began in January, on January 21st of 2020. That's official counting. There was a lot of work, of course, that went in before that, about almost 2 years worth of work, as they were establishing their local offices, their local representatives, they were laying out the schedule. So a lot of the groundwork, but officially the first counts themselves, the online portal and actual in-person counting began on January 21st of 2020. The census mailers themselves went out for people to be able to start self-reporting via mail in March 12th. And then officially they have what they refer to as Census Day. I won't point out that that's on April Fool's Day. I think that's not intentional. But Census Day, of course, is when they really start their media push, their outreach, and making sure that they are having as close contact at the local level as they possibly can to really make sure that people know, be counted, this is what the census is, this is why it matters, this is why it's important. Mm-hmm. That is followed up, of course, by all of their on-site and their virtual activities, which were enhanced this year on the virtual side. We saw much more of that than we would have seen out of not only necessity, they were trying to get more of that virtual presentation out, but then obviously it really ended up being just out of sheer necessity. So those will go through the end of this month. So the 30th this month will be the last day that they will conduct official counts. And that means that the online portal is still open, which is actually, at first they had extended it through October 31st, but they had what referred to as enumerated counts that were so good up to that point that they felt that they would pull it back 30 days. So now we're looking at the 30th of this month as being the last day there. Then this line right here can scare some people because of the word redistricting, but really what that means is when those counts come in and they've taken a look, they begin, if appropriate, to actually adjust census tract boundaries to account for the population counts and where people are living and where the services are needed and how the census dollars, of course, the associated dollars are going to be broken down. And they anticipate completion of that total process in 2021. Completion meaning counts are seen as finalized and the redistricting, if appropriate, is underway. That doesn't necessarily mean that redistricting may be done. It may in some cases, it might not in others, but at least the counts themselves would be seen as official and they have the numbers locked in that they're going to move forward with for the next decade. So yeah, again, just pointing there down at the bottom, counting efforts end on September 30th. So if you have not self-reported yet, I would certainly encourage you to do that. It is as simple as Googling Census 2020, and it'll take you immediately to that site. So you can do that. If you have any friends or family that haven't as well, please encourage them to do that also, because it really does make a difference on the dollar allocations that we get from the various government entities. Okay. To take a very quick look here at the current counts, and as I had said, this is as of today, or yesterday, excuse me, into business yesterday. So the response rates that we're looking at for those self-responding, and this is statewide, I'm going to give you state, then county, and then we're going to get right down to Reedley. So statewide, we're looking at 68.6% have confirmed self-reported. 28.6% are in what is referred to as non-response follow-up, meaning that they are still trying to reach those people and a combination of confirming additional population numbers, the actual census staffers confirming those numbers, and then non-enumerated, meaning not yet accounted for, but that they're currently trying to identify, is that balance between the self-reporting, the non-response follow-up, and that 100%, of course, which is always the goal there, and that is at 2.8%. So trending very, very well. California is actually doing extremely well right now. As the largest state in the nation, we are right now in the top 15 of self-reporting numbers, which is phenomenal as the largest state in the nation. Fresno County is pretty close to those same items. You'll notice that I left out the numbers there. They actually don't do the not yet counted, the enumerated number once you get down to the county and the local level. They don't take it to that sense just yet. So self-responding, they have 67.5 of those. In non-response, follow-up is 32.5. I wanted to put a note right there. Of that 67.5, roughly 73% of those have self-responded via an online platform. They don't break that out as far as online or via telephone. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, I couldn't give you those numbers right there, but they just simply call it remote. Even though the communications that we'd have with them, they are saying that the vast majority of responses are coming in through internet means at this time, ranging anywhere. They said they believe that it ranges anywhere from 75% plus.
That was the easiest way, I thought.
It was very quick. Yeah. I think I went through the count for my family in maybe 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Okay, and then to Reedley, of course, we're looking at 69.8% self-reporting, and in non-response follow-up is that balance there, that 30.2%, and roughly around the same, 72.1 of those counts are being via online response. So we want to point out that we are doing better than the county as a whole, which I think is representative of our civic-minded population. I think that's very important. And here are our local and our regional contacts. Reedley does have a local direct contact. His name is Jess Rodriguez. I've met with him multiple times as we've been going throughout this process, pre-pandemic, of course. Since then, our communications have been virtual. He is a Reedley native, though, so obviously has a deep love for the community and very much so wants to see Reedley have a very high response rate so that we can receive the resources that are associated with that. And then the regional contact, who is actually with Fresno County, is Catherine Martindale. And she has been very quick to respond as well in the instances when I've reached out to her looking for basic questions about census. She's been very responsive. So that concludes my presentation. I think the most important thing about everything there is that through the 30th of this month, we still have the opportunity to self-report and to be as accurate with those numbers as we possibly can and to be able to secure those resources for the city of Reedley. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions that council may have. And just remind you, I will provide this PowerPoint in PDF form after this meeting so you have access to those numbers there, but most importantly, the contact information if needed.
Thank you, Rob.
So,
terrific.
So, Rob, I have a question. So what about that 30%? How would we know, like, in our neighborhood, if people have not reported, how would we find that out?
So we could reach out. Yeah, honestly, direct contact is the way that also the census staff even does that. They do have mapping that they will utilize that goes literally home by home, and they will check items off. Aside from that, they do not post anything that gets down to the address specific level in the public forum like that. Okay. They just do it by the actual existing census tract or within the existing city limit. So the only way to really know if someone has done that or not, or at least get a feel from them if they've done that, is by directly asking them or reaching out to the local contact and potentially asking if they could share that information so that you could, say, encourage neighbors or whatnot to step up. Mm-hmm. I know the communications that I had with him, there were a couple neighborhoods that he had notated, even though he wasn't involved in the last census. He said that the feedback that he had was that there were multiple neighborhoods in Reedley that they had struggled getting census counts from in the 2010 census. And as a result of that, he was asking me, what can we do to have better communication with those neighborhoods and encourage those neighborhoods to be more engaged? And so we worked on those items together.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions from the council?
Now, do they work with the Neighborhood Watch program?
The census itself? That's a good question. I'm honestly not sure if there's a linkage there. Typically, the Neighborhood Watch, I believe, is in collaboration with PD. I don't know how much linkage that may have with with census, aside from any dollars that may go to PD to support those type of community services. Nicole, do you happen to know?
You know, I don't, but Mr. Salino, that is really has sparked my thought process on the fact that we could use a Nextdoor app and some of our methods like that to just help the Census Bureau out a little bit with some of those communities. So we'll take a look at that. You know, the Census Bureau has been active with Rob and active within our community. You'll probably see, particularly this last week, I've seen a lot of census takers through our neighborhood. You'll notice they're very distinct in the briefcase and their census pass that they have. But we can definitely get something out through Nextdoor and some of the social media channels if that's something that council's interested in.
I think that'd be a great idea.
Yeah great thought.
Anything that
Especially through Nextdoor, as it's broken down on that neighborhood level, I think it can be very, very effective with that message.
We did use our electronic billboard up at Manning and I to put a census message on there as well. So we have done that already. But, yeah, we can definitely look into that, Mr. Swain.
Thank you.
Or is it unrealistic to have every council member go to their district and go knock on doors?
Well, I'm going to go through my neighborhood and take
this.
That's
a good idea, isn't it?
And just ask. I mean, I know most of my neighbors, but they may not have filled their forms out yet.
Yeah. Very good. Do we need to go to the public with this as well? Okay. Very good. Any other questions, Council? All right. Thank you,
Rob.
Item 13, Ridley Planning Commission minutes of regular meeting of May 21st, 2020. That's just a meeting that was taken place, right?
And
very good. We go on, move on to council reports. And Mr. Salino, you have anything to report? Council Member Betancourt? Council Member Beck, you have anything? Mayor Pro Tem Bass.
I just have a couple of things. I received a letter in the mail from Ridley Middle College High School, and it's about engaging the merchants that are willing to be a part of their little project to put reminder stickers at the liquor stores about not selling to people under 21. And I was wondering if we could maybe forward that to the chamber.
Yes, and we definitely have been, this is the same group that came to council that we've been working with. And so the chief and I have been working with this group to make sure that when the timing is appropriate, they can come back around and speak to council in person. But yes, we can definitely talk to the chamber.
I just thought that might be something that they could promote with the liquor stores that are chamber members and that group.
Yeah, Adelpha Lorenzano at the college, who is also the Ridley Middle College High, she is also on Eric's board, and so, there's communication there.
Yeah, that'd be good. And I wanted to thank Scott and your staff for the donation for the walk for Team Challenge this weekend. Appreciate that. I made a comment before about possibility of opening Trimble Park without the splash pad, just an idea. And that's all. Most of my meetings this last 2 weeks were canceled, so
thank you. I joined the Armory Ridley Vets. They had a an event where they were asking Ridley and surrounding communities to help with donating goods to help the fire victims and the first responders. And they had a really good response. I just want to say to the Ridley Vets that, that's a very commendable effort. And they gathered quite a few items. That was during the same time that the prayer walk was going on, I believe. But I just wanted to say thank you to all those that, Matt, you were there. All the participants and those that donated to this cause. Really devastating time for firefighters. Chief, I don't know how you are able to stay awake, but, they got you running to and fro, right? Anyhow, That's all I have to report. City Manager, do you have any
reports? Sure. Thank you, Council. I have just a few things to report. One is we did get a call late last week from the county. Supervisors Brandau and Pacheco held a meeting with the 15 city managers, City of Fresno was not included in this, but the rural city managers, and in fact, the county received quite a large sum of money for CARES Act, the Federal CARES Act, and what they decided to do was to distribute some of it by formula to the rural cities because they were recognizing that the rural cities did not receive the amount of money that a city of Fresno did. I in my years of working in Fresno, have never had the county reach out and say, we're giving you money. And it is a large amount. It's about $250,000 that they're going to give us. This is all COVID related. It's all CARES Act funding, has the same criteria as the CARES Act funding that we had previously. And what we discussed as a larger group is that some of the smaller cities are the ones that are hurting the most right now because they don't have the resources for outreach. So a Huron, a San Joaquin, a Firebaugh, their case counts are much higher in a prorate or population share. So they received quite large amounts because this formula was not just based on population, it was actually based on population in accordance with case counts. So they now have funds to go forward and do some additional testing, some outreach, some communication to their public, which is fabulous. Really smart way to do it. I nearly fell out of my chair when they said we had $250,000 coming from the county that usually take money from us, not the other way around. So Paul and I are working with our department heads to talk about the greatest and best use of this funds. We do have a meeting with UHC and Adventist set for Friday to talk about potentially doing free testing or increased testing, because one of the things that will move us into the next less restrictive tier is if our positivity rate improves. And by the way, we do not have a 20% positivity rate as reported on the media. Small cities do not have positivity rates, so I just want to get that out right there. So the more people that we can get tested that are healthy, the positivity rate goes down. So we want as many people getting tested. You feel great, go get tested. You feel sick, go get tested. We want as many people getting tested as possible because they're looking at the overall amount of people testing versus how many actually have the virus. And as soon as we can get that down, we move into the next less tier. Now, on that note, that doesn't mean we necessarily will spend the money on that. We will come back to council and council will have the approval on what we propose. So as we move forward, all of the city managers have been talking this week about trying to leverage the funds together for the biggest bang for the buck for the county itself. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to do that, and then we'll bring you a package on October 13th. The timeline is the same for this funding as was for the funding we received directly from the state, and that is it has to be spent by December 31st. So short time frame, we get in there, we need to punch it out, $250,000, and I think we want to make sure it's the best bang for the buck.
Can yes. I make a comment?
Yes.
I had some friends that ended up having COVID, but they ended up going to Fresno to get testing because they wouldn't test them here. Mm-hmm. And it took 6 days till they got their report back.
Yes.
So if there's any way that can be expedited, I think that will really help in cutting down people because, you know, they assumed that they had it, but they really didn't know. And if somebody went and got tested, but they didn't get a result and just kept going around, they could have spread it to a whole lot of people without really wanting to do that.
I think you bring up a couple of really good points. One is that it is harder to get tested than one might think, because even though this free testing has been touted out there, when you call to make the appointment that's required, the doctor asks if you have symptoms, which a lot of people then not having symptoms will hang up and not move forward with the test. What we've talked to the county about, and in fact, just today I talked to our public health liaison, her name is Ruby Sauceda. We want to see if our city funds can get out to our lower income communities, our Spanish speaking populations, yes. for completely free testing with no symptoms. It is just you walk up and if you're living and breathing, you get a test. And so that's why this face-to-face meeting on Friday with Adventist and UHC is so critical, because we want to make sure that they understand this is different than the testing that was being done previous. Unfortunately, you know, there was an issue with Kaiser. If you were a Kaiser member, you did not get permission to get tested. So lots of issues with the previous testing. The fortunate thing is that the testing methods have gotten quicker. So there was just an article in today's Business Journal about tests that can now be done in 15 minutes, and there's more and more media there to be able to do tests with. So we're hoping to do tests quickly. That is a more expensive test, so we don't want our dollars to be, you know, we want our dollars to go the largest amount possible. But even the testing results, for a while there were so many tests nationwide that it was really slowing down and backlogging. The last I had heard from somebody, they got their test results back in about 3 days. So okay. It's getting better. Okay. Getting better. That doesn't necessarily mean we'll do testing. We want to make sure we have the biggest bang for the buck, but we'll put the plan together and bring it to council for you on October 13th.
Thank you. So.
Great. What was the turnout for the one at the community center that you that they were going to use? Was
37 people came out.
That's not very many. It was from what, 1 to 7 o'clock?
It was. The notice didn't get out until about 24 hours before. I think that had something to do with
yes.
it.
Yeah.
But we did push it hard. And but yeah, 37 came out.
So this is one that it was very unusual testing. The state asked the county to set that testing up here. It was done by the National Guard. I think one, there were a lot of people concerned about who was doing the testing, and another was that we weren't even really told about the testing or given the flyer or any data about it till the day before. That's really hard to get people through.
Was that a free testing?
It was a drive-through one right in front of the community.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people there, so I agree. Kind of intimidation, and, you know, probably
like
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We still don't quite understand why that was done the way it was done, but that was from the state through the county, so I can't even really, the county tried their best, and we tried our best to hook it up, so do what we can do. So that was one thing I wanted to mention. There is a press conference on Thursday. Both Supervisor Pacheco and Brandao have asked for the cities to show up. We've asked Mayor Pignon if he would represent the city. I will be there as backup, and that'll be in front of the Fresno County Plaza on Thursday morning, so press conference on that. Our cases are looking better and better. Our hospitalizations are decreasing, and in fact, we heard from the hospital administrator on Monday that our local hospital and Adventist system in general is looking very good for hospitalizations. Hospitalizations are down all around the county, and the case counts are sort of leveling out, and so that's a nice thing that we're seeing. Of course, as we head into the fall and winter months, the state is telling us to be concerned about people in close proximity. We expect to move to the next less restrictive tier within the next couple of weeks. We're looking very good. Our last public health briefing on Monday afternoon from the public health officer showed that we're actually meeting one metric, but we're just barely not meeting the other metric. So we need to, and that metric is the positivity rate. So that's why more testing means our positivity rate increases. Or gets better. So that was on COVID. A couple other items. Our first two flight science grads out of Reedley College just finished their program and graduated this week. So first two flight science in the brand new Reedley College Aeronautics program. We're very excited for them. They already have jobs. They are taking on instructor roles at Reedley College in the flight science department because there is enough demand. So we're excited for those folks. PBS, the Nova series, is coming to Reedley. They will be filming our electric aircraft and flying with Joseph Oldham in the electric aircraft on October 4th. If you are interested, that's a Sunday. They will be out at the airport. I'll be out there with Joseph in case they want to do any interviews. This special that PBS is going to be doing is on electric aviation, which is really taking off, no pun intended. And then, Mr. Soleno, I wanted to report back to you. You were the one who had requested that we look at potentially some car service at the airport, which most small rural airports or a lot of small rural airports do offer, so that people who fly in can then take a car into the city and spend their tax dollars going to restaurants, etc. We've not yet heard back on the grant we applied for some electric cars. However, thanks to Moses at FCTA or FRCTA, thank you. We are going to be getting an electric charger out at the airport, and that will be installed within the next few weeks. And so we're very excited about that because many pilots, including Joseph Oldham, have electric cars that they drive out there, and they will now be able to charge up using a solar-powered electric charger, which gives us one step closer when we get that grant, which I know we'll get for those electric cars. So good stuff happening there. And there's two housekeeping items. The Fiesta Parade is going to happen this year, but it's going to happen in a different format, and that is sort of a reverse parade where the parade displays will be up and down G Street, and people who want to see or parade through will be coming down in their cars on G Street. So it's sort of a Christmas tree lane sort of format. What I need to find out from the council, we normally have you in the old fire truck going first down the parade route to lead the parade off. Because this is going to be a static display where you would just be stationary, if you can let Sylvia know within the next day or two if you have any interest, we would need to apply for a booth, and we're not sure how that might go. So if you could let Sylvia know, we'll determine if there's enough interest to have a city council booth there. So
maybe need to put up our cardboard things, huh?
And then just lastly, given what we're seeing with the election changes because of both the voting centers and the absentee ballots, the county clerk notified us very recently that we will not be receiving the final certification tallies from her, and that's a legal document that we need, until December 3rd or 4th, which means it is very hard to get it on our December 8th meeting, and that is the meeting, or sometime in December, by which we legally have to certify results of the election and change our mayors, etc. So we are taking a look with Scott and the city clerk as to whether or not we move our 1 December meeting later on in the month, so it would be maybe December 15th rather than December 8th. We usually only meet once in December, so we usually meet once in November, once in December. If we make that change, we will let you know as soon as possible, because I know that there are Christmas plans and holiday plans. But we're looking at doing that so that we have ample time to certify those election results and abide by the state law on that. So we'll keep you posted on that meeting date for December. Are there any staff with any updates, Chief?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. In front of you, I did come bearing gifts. You do have a pink patch. Obviously, October 1 starts the annual pink patch project that the Reedley Police Department has been proudly supporting for the past three. This is going to be our third year now. Just a little bit of information. Last year, there was $63,000 that was raised as a result of the pink patch project. And that $63,000 was used to purchase a special software to reduce the unnecessary biopsies for breast cancer patients. And it's already helped hundreds and hundreds of patients that are suffering from breast cancer. So every dollar that we raise during this time goes to a good cause, obviously. And so we do encourage you to pass the information on to your friends. The pink patches are available at the police department. They just got to come down and request one. They're $10. And then this year also, the Radin Breast Cancer Center is also going to be having an online store, and they'll make that available as well for folks to purchase patches, not only Reedley patches, but any other patches from any other of the participating agencies. So we really look forward to this. And again, some of our officers will be are given the permission to wear their uniforms and wear the pink patch during the month of October. So if you do see them out wearing a pink patch, that's what they're doing. And we're just glad to help support and anything that we can do to help deal with this problem. So thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Chief.
Council, I just wanted to give you a very quick update. For those of you that are not aware, our longtime building official, phenomenal building official, is beginning his transition into retirement.
No.
And as a result of that, we have started to work as a department on our contingency plan. I guess that's really what it absolutely feels like right now. But what we're looking to do is bring in a consultant that's going to allow us cost efficiency, but most importantly, flexibility, as we are working to ensure that we're having as much cross-training taking place with him as he is beginning that transition into retirement, and to allow staff to transition into taking on additional roles and even improving some of the capacity that they have right now. So in the coming weeks, next couple meetings, council should anticipate seeing an agreement coming back from community development that is going to detail those consultant services. And just, I didn't want that to come out of left field for you, and also wanted to take the opportunity really just to celebrate our building official, as we know has just made such a positive impact on the community development department and the interactions that we have had with the development community and what that means now. For the longest time, Reedley was unfortunately one of those agencies that had a reputation that they're challenging, their staff can be challenging to deal with. And that's not the case anymore. In fact, developers actually celebrate coming to Reedley. And I think that he played one of the major, major roles in that. So really want to take the opportunity really just to express my appreciation for him and what he's done for this community, but also to make sure that council understood that we are addressing it and we're working on these items in a very mindful manner. And we'll bring you more details in the meetings to come. Mm.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
I do want to say that I do get a lot of great compliments about his work and how he's right on. I mean, he knows what he's doing.
He's one of the
kind. Yeah. So we're going to miss him when he's gone. Very good.
One more, Mayor. Sorry.
Sarah?
Good evening. You'll want to hear this one. So number three opportunity for Camacho Park. We are gearing up to put in another application. As you know, strike one, strike two. This is going to be the home run, right?
Yes.
So we have a couple of public meetings coming up. If you are able to sit through those, we're going to talk about the challenges and weaknesses, as the state called them, with our last application. We're addressing those issues, and we will bring forward a resolution for you at the November meeting because we have to have that submitted to the state by December. So just so you're aware, we're going after it one more time.
Third time's a charm.
We're hoping.
Very good. Thank you,
Sarah. That's all, Mayor.
Very good. So this concludes the meeting for this evening. Thank you for all your hard work. Have a good evening. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Meeting adjourned.
Yes, sir.